Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for being here on another exciting episode. I am very excited about this conversation I'm going to have with this guest. I've talked to him several times, and this, I think, might be one of the times we only had him on a long-form episode. It might have been our first season that we had him on a conversation like this. So much has changed since then. He's come on through some other events that we've had, like our radiothon events and so forth. Our guest is Chris Carino today of the Brooklyn Nets. Talking with him, for me, for someone that I sit behind a mic as a podcast person, and I'm sure there's a radio people out in the world that might eye roll that, like, hey, you're just a podcaster. I've done it a long time. So I kind of try to say, you know, I was maybe before there was a podcast everywhere. I was definitely the slightly a podcast pioneer to some degree, at least in my neck of the woods, when not a lot of people were talking about it. To have it develop into this, and I love the craft of talking on the radio. I love listening to announcers, especially when it comes to sports. Basketball is not my top sport, but I do enjoy listening to it, and I do spend the time to listen to Chris Carino's call. And you can find it out there in the World Wide Web, and that's the reward of that. I get to hear him do his craft. In this episode, we talk about those things. We talk about announcing the sports that he does, including handball, of all things. That was a surprise that he talked about, as well as what he has to work through and how he has to cope with traveling and the exhaustion of that on top of calling games. Some great moments within his career we touch upon, including winning an award from the NBA that he was surprised that he won it. We get into that story. So many things we unpack in this. And what you'll find is Chris is an amazing storyteller of the truth, things that he has come across in his life. He ends the episode with a phenomenal story that really is it's a full circle moment that I could feel myself getting emotional about it. Thinking about it now, I almost do. It really meant a lot for me to have him on this episode. I admire him greatly for what he does because even though he is way above of what I do behind the mic, what he can accomplish, the way he works through a game, the energy, it is a craft. It is an art. And he does it so very well that I get nervous almost when I know he's going to come on because I'm like, this is a professional. And I'm just Tim in a basement. So it was great to have him on here. One of the key words, though, that he brings into is about how you and can envision your life, maybe your greatest dreams and yet your greatest fears. And he talks about how they both can happen, and it's still going to be okay. It's just remarkable storytelling. So that's what you're in store for this episode. I've had also great responses from people listening to the show. Keep them coming. We are working on other ways for you to connect with me. So I look forward to possibly sharing different ways to do that. But right now you can go through FSHD Radio at fshdsociety.org. This episode, as long as all the others, are still brought to you by the FSHD Society. Visit fshdsociety.org for the latest, greatest of what's going on in the research world and the FSHD community, including all the fundraising events. We're not actually far away from the walk and roll events and so forth, all coming in the fall. So start locking into those things. Join a chapter, be a part of those groups, as well as so many other groups. Feeling Fit with FSHD is just to name one, and so many. The Wellness Hour, so many things to offer you. I'm glad this show is in your ears as well. If you don't find us through the website, sure you found us either through Spotify or Google or other places that you find your podcasts. Don't forget to rate, review, help us climb the ladder a little bit, get it out there. Because one of the things we also cover is World FSHD Day. Special episodes are launched on that day of this show, but it's also another way to get people to recognize what FSHD is. And if you can tell others about this show, because simply, I think it reaches beyond just the science of FSHD and hearing about that or treatments, that maybe people from the outside, you're not going to draw them in that way, but you'll draw them in with the stories. You'll draw them in with the people that we bring on this episode and others. So share the podcast, tell your friends about it, key in on those conversations that we have with these amazing people that share their life and what they're doing in it, even though they have FSHD. I think the stories are incredible. And finding great people is become easier and easier because they're starting to come to me, right? With FSHD radio at FSHDsociety.org email, send me your people you want to be on the show. If you want to be on the show, if you have an idea you want us to talk about, I'm wide open to all of it. So look forward to hearing from you that way. So I don't want to leave you waiting any longer. Coming up next, the interview with Brooklyn Nets, voice of the Brooklyn Nets, Chris Carino and the Chris Carino Foundation. So welcome to this episode here of the FSHD Straight Talk, which is it's still tough for me, Chris. I don't know if you've ever had to deal with that when you change the title of a show or a podcast and you got to make sure you don't give the old title, it's the new title. Anyway, it's been several episodes, but this one I am excited to bring to you. We're covering a multitude of different parts in this episode, including a little conversation of World FSHD Day, as we want to cover that in this conversation as well. But we welcome our guest. I'm always excited to talk to Mr. Carino. He is a little bit of a radio idol of mine. He's a play-by-play radio announcer for the Brooklyn Nets, has FSHD, has a wonderful foundation he has started called the Chris Carino Foundation. We welcome him now today. How's it going, Chris?
Tim, it is always great to be on with you, and I didn't realize I had that kind of impact in your life, so thank you.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And it was a little bit like you changing the name of the show. It's a little bit like when the team that I work for, the Nets, went from New Jersey to Brooklyn. There was a lot. You had to concentrate a lot on not saying New Jersey.
Did I say New Jersey?
No. I'm saying, like you said, that people change the name of your show when you have a hard time remembering the new name.
Right. I did kind of freak out there for a minute because I was like, you know, because I mean, I grew up with it being New Jersey, and now it's been Brooklyn for a while. But granted,
yeah, it's a while. It's quite a while. It's been 12 years now, which is amazing. Yeah, it just flies. But and there still are people who will every once in a while say New Jersey. I don't know how that happens. But
well, it's kind of like, you know, when they change the name of a stadium too, like here in the Milwaukee area, even though I'm wearing a Twin shirt. But in the Milwaukee area, they talk about, Miller Park. Well, it was Miller Park. Now it's American Family Field, you know, and I'm sure that happens to everybody. It's the same problem, right? Just a
great ballpark, by the way.
Yeah. You've been there?
Yeah. A couple of times.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Excellent. Yeah. When the Nets were in Milwaukee a couple of years ago in the playoffs, it was early May and we were there and had a day off in between games. And went to the ballpark. Nice. It was a nice Saturday afternoon game. I love that. And I'd been there, I think, years ago too. We happened to, the Nets crossed paths there with the Brewers in early on, and got to go to the game. So I've been there a few times. Yeah, and Brian Anderson's a friend of mine, and I have a Brewers hat somewhere, Tim. I know I should have worn it. I didn't think of it now. I should go get it and put it on.
Wait, now what kind of Brewer hat are we talking, like?
Oh, you're a Twins logo? Fan, so.
Well, no, I do like, well, I like all baseball. I say I'm more of a, I know I throw people off all the time with all the different sports teams I wear. If you see that, it's like, I'm really not that biased as long as it's baseball related. But Brewers, yeah, they definitely hold a place in my heart. But you say Brewers hat, which logo are we talking about here?
The one with the ball and the glove, which is the beautiful. M and the B with the great logo where the people don't know the old logo. It looked like a glove, but it's really an M and a B.
Yes. It is classic. It is my all-time favorite. I love it.
Yeah, with the yellow front and really cool hat.
Awesome. Well, at least you have the good one. Yeah, there's been other logos in the past and not so good. So I'm glad they went back to that too. Yeah,
when they were in the playoffs a couple of years ago, Brian Anderson sent me like he's the play by play announcer for the Brewers, and he sent me a championship sweatshirt and hat and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, because nice. I like the logo.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it's great. And now they have the more modern colors of the dark blue and the really bright yellow. Yeah, it's
great.
It's awesome. Yeah. And then go back to the ball and glove. So that was actually my idea, but they never heard me and they just did it on their own. So I have no,
you weren't vocal enough.
Credit. I need a bigger microphone or something, or yell louder. So you have been a radio announcer for the Nets for a long time. You've been with the organization. Was it 92?
Yeah. Yeah. Just finished my 34 seasons as with the team in some capacity. I started working part-time out of college in 1992 as just a part-time game night studio producer. Worked my way on to some on-air segments in the pregame, postgame. They started doing halftime. Nice. Started working with the team full-time in broadcast operations in 1997. And took over as the play-by-play voice in 2001. So I just finished my 23rd season as the play-by-play announcer, yeah.
And having FSHD, obviously, for most of us, right, the disease progresses. So over that time, when you started behind the mic to current times, what have those challenges brought to you when it comes to travel or even, getting through your home stadium?
Yeah, the biggest issue for me has been the travel. As you know, travel is a big part of it. You want to be in the arena, you want to be embedded with the team. And we would take private charters, which is great, but, we don't always pull into a gate of an airport. So, oftentimes it's a big staircase that's led up to a plane in the middle of a tarmac somewhere. And oftentimes this is late at night or early in, it could be after a game around midnight. It can be, then you get into another city at 2-3 in the morning. And there's a staircase you have to navigate, and then there's buses you have to get on and off of. And this became more and more difficult as the years went along. And in the last few years, going back to 2019 now, I started using a mobility device, first a scooter, now a power wheelchair. And this has made it much more complicated for me. There's a lift for me in our home airport at Newark Airport. But then it depends on where you land, if there's a lift or if you're able to pull into a gate.
Yeah.
So what we've been doing now the last few seasons is, if there isn't an accessible way for me to get on and off the plane, I've been flying commercial, which then goes into a gate. The commercial flying isn't terrible. I have, my partner Tim Capstraw, who does the games with me, he'll travel with me commercially. There's the complications of commercial travel. And the problem is, if you have a back-to-back situation where you're playing in one day, in one city in one day, and then you have to play in another city the next day.
Yeah.
You sometimes don't want to travel commercially the day of a game. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely complications. We try to make it work. What we've been doing is also, during COVID, we realized that we could broadcast some games remotely. Now, mm-hmm. during COVID, we started doing the games from Barclays Center, even the road games. So we would do them off a TV monitor. And then that graduated to being able to go into our the NBA studios in Secaucus, which is not far from my home, where they have the studios and the feeds that we can watch. Basketball is not the most difficult thing to do off monitor because the TV camera picks up all 10 guys on the floor. It's obviously not the ideal way that we want to do it, but it can be done effectively. And we have a feed coming from the arena that has the sounds of the arena, mm-hmm. the effects, we call them. So oftentimes if I'm doing a game that way, and you're listening on the radio, you won't really be able to tell if I'm there or not. So what has happened is we've gone the last couple of seasons now to a little more of a hybrid system for me. You know, the team said you can travel all you want. We know that gets a little, that can be a little difficult, and it can wear on even the most healthy body. And now, especially with the issues of not being able to always be on the charter, we've kind of gone to a hybrid system. So last year I did about 15 games off monitor.
Okay.
So it definitely did save on some of the wear and tear in the travel. And we would travel with the team early in the season, especially. And then the season didn't go great. And a lot of these games late in the season were not of the utmost importance when we kind of got out of the playoff picture. Yeah. So being embedded with the team wasn't as crucial.
Mm-hmm.
So we erred on the side of
doing more remote.
Yeah, just a little less wear and tear. So that's kind of where we are right now with that.
How does that feel, though, like energy-wise? Do you feed off the energy when you're actually physically there? When you're doing air announcing, and is there a little bit of a disconnect? Does that offer a new struggle?
It is. And I've done a lot of off-monitor stuff in my career that had nothing to do with the FSHD stuff. It was more, early on, I was doing a lot of NBA TV, international games where it would be EuroLeague games and things like that, where I would go into the studio. I did three Olympics that way for NBC. NBC would keep about half of their broadcast team back in the States. And we would do games off monitor that way. So I would do, they would do the U.S. games from site, and then they would do the non-U.S. games from either. We did 30 Rock in 2008, 2012. I did them from 30 Rock, literally on this, on the, literally on the, sorry, my phone is going off. What an amateur thing. An amateur thing to leave my phone on. What was I saying? Oh, so 30. So yeah, the Olympics in 2008, 2012, I did from 30 Rock, literally on the sound stage of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, wow!
I was in they built these little sound booths for the announcers, and they have them scattered throughout Studio 8H.
Mm-hmm.
And my sound booth every day was the one literally where they do the monologue for Saturday Night Live. And I would do the non-U.S. basketball games every day. Men one day, women one day. So I did that in 2008, 2012. And then in 2016, I did handball. And I did that. Yeah. And they had moved all their operations up to their, they built the facility up in Stamford, Connecticut. So, yeah.
Now, okay.
And those are all off monitor. So I did three Olympics, and I've never been to the Olympics.
Right. which is maybe good or maybe bad. I mean, probably cool to see, right?
Yeah, but it makes it a lot easier. Yeah,
a lot easier. But the geeky question that I have, radio geek question, is handball, right? You just said handball. Do you have to know the sport really well to broadcast the sport?
I didn't think so initially. I thought I'd just watch a couple of games on YouTube and I'd be good. And then we get in to do like a practice game, and I'm realizing that every time I hear a whistle, I have no idea why they just blew the whistle. But I had in my booth with me, the U.S. team hadn't qualified for the Olympics. So I had the goaltender for the U.S. handball team in the booth with me. Not calling the games with me. He was there to be like my stat guy and researcher and helper, and he became my spotter. He became my right hand guy.
Yeah.
Shout out to Gabe, and he came up with a system, like a cheat sheet he would have in front of me, and he had all these terms, and when something would happen, he would point to the term.
Okay.
And I would know exactly, it's a foul. That's a 7-meter foul. This is going to be a free throw, you know, things like that. And then a few days in, I started to get it, you know,
yeah,
it's a kind of repetitive game. So I was able to get it, but yeah. But going back to your original question though, you know, do you have the energy level? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like when you're in the building, you speak to the level of the crowd, of the audience, of the game. When you're doing it off monitor, you have to fake it a little bit. You have to make sure that you get. But now that's why I'll have the engineer really crank up the crowd noise in my headset.
Mm-hmm.
So that I have the feeling of trying to fight the crowd a little bit the same way I would do in an arena. So there, you know, you have to be able to raise your energy level and manufacture it a little bit when you're doing it off monitor. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's got to be fun, challenging. It's probably easier though for basketball compared to handball. You know, if you know the energy of basketball, you know, you've done it probably more than handball.
But it's more of what you see on the monitor. So as long as you could see all the players at the same time, like, I actually did EuroLeague football, European football, you know, when the American football, when they had the European League.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did some of that off monitor, and that was hard because you can't see all 22 guys.
True.
So you see the pocket, you see the quarterback, and you see them loft the ball downfield, and you don't know what. And whereas when I'm doing a football game, and I do national radio for football in the during the season, you know, you see everyone on the field. So you see a receiver break free, you know, or you see a receiver fall down, or you know, you can see it all. And the other part of it is when you're doing it off monitor, you're at the mercy of what the camera, the director is going to shoot. So, you know, you see it, and then they cut to a person on the bench or things like that. And now you're like, not looking. So, yeah, but little things. Sometimes I may want to look at somebody on the bench, or I may want to look at some part of the arena that's not being shown on the screen right now.
Yeah.
But you have to just kind of make your way through it and do what you got to do. Kind of a metaphor for life with FSHD, right? It's not exactly as you wanted it or planned it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you can't do it at a high level or effectively and find ways to do it better and better.
But you've been definitely recognized for the work you've done. And of course, having FSHD, creating the foundation, but the NBA, what I found, recognized you. Values of the Game Award. Am I saying that right, Chris? That you
Yes.
Were in 2023?
Yes. That was really, it was an incredible surprise. They actually kept that secret. The team was in Miami to play the Heat, and it was actually a day where I had done I did something kind of crazy. I did a Jets Dolphins game.
Okay.
At 1 o'clock, up in where the Dolphins play, which is not in Miami. It's up in Miami Gardens, which is kind of a little bit north of Fort Lauderdale, and I did that for Compass Media Networks, so that was national radio. And the Nets were playing the Heat in Miami at 6 o'clock that day. So I actually did the game, and then the Jet game, and then my spotter and neighbor and friend Ira Brofsky, who travels with me to do football, he had the rental car revved up, mm-hmm. and we somehow maneuvered our way out of the football stadium. Through the traffic, got down to Miami, and I rolled in to the arena and kind of rolled them into my booth about 5:30, which was about 20 minutes before airtime.
Wow.
To do the Nets Heat. And so it was a really cool day. Like I think, like, if I always tell myself, if I could tell 12-year-old me that one day I was going to do an NFL game and an NBA game in a city somewhere in the same day, I would have thought that was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
And it was. It was incredibly fun and thrilling and gratifying. And then what happened was the team was leaving, but we weren't playing until at home a couple of days later. And the equipment manager and our traveling secretary of the team had said to me, hey, this is a while back. It said, hey, we're, you know, the team has a couple of days off. I had intended to bring my family down to Miami for a couple of days. And he said, you know, if you want to try out the Fountain Blue Hotel in Miami for an extra day, I have somebody that's going to give me a comp, you know, room because they're trying to get our business. And I'd love, you know, give me some feedback on the hotel and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know you're going to have your family, so maybe you get an extra day at the Fountain Blue Hotel. And I said, oh, yeah, that'd be great. You know, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
What I didn't know was that the NBA sales and marketing meetings were going on at the Fountain Blue Hotel that weekend. Mm. And this was all a ruse to get me there and to get my family to come down.
Yeah.
But they knew about it. So then our CEO, Sam Zussman, also was part of the ruse. He got me to come down to meet with him, at a break in the meetings. And then when we were speaking, then he told me that there was a speaker in the meetings that he wanted me to come in and see. He'd think I would like it. So he tricked me into coming in. And now when I walk in, I didn't even realize the magnitude of the meeting. It's like there are two or three tables for every team in the league filled in this huge ballroom in this hotel, the Fountain Blue Hotel. And there was a guest speaker, and then they were giving out some sales and marketing awards. And the commissioner, Adam Silver, and deputy commissioner Tatum they're up there, and they're giving out, you know, these awards to the different teams for sales and marketing. And then they start to talk about this Values of the Game Award.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there and I'm listening. I'm like, and they start to go, well, this is a lifetime kind of award for someone who has shown, you know, dedication despite having a disability, and what they've done in the community and all this kind of stuff. And stupid me is sitting there going,
"Are you looking?" Yeah,
I'm looking around the room and I'm going, I got to meet this person. Like, there's another person with a disability.
Yeah.
That is working in the NBA, and I don't come across a lot of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they start playing a video, and it's my partner Tim, and
yeah.
And now I'm looking around, and all the people that work for the Nets that are there are kind of looking at me smiling, and everybody knew. But I didn't know, and it was and then my wife and my son weren't even in the room. Oh. Well, they were. I didn't know they were
there. Yeah, you didn't know they were there.
It was part of the and all of a sudden I get called up, and you know, I shouldn't have known, because listen, everything like this should have a ramp to the stage.
Yeah.
But they had a ramp set up to the stage, and which I found out later was because of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I come up to get the award from Adam Silver and Mark Tatum, and now I see my wife and my son making their way up to the stage, and Tim making his way up to the stage, and so it was an incredibly nice moment for me. And yeah, it was recognizing what I've been able to do. And then with what we've done with the foundation, and just, you know, meets the values of what the NBA likes to it. So yeah, it was a nice thing.
They got you good on that one. I mean, right up to the moment.
I looked at our CEO and I was like, you sandbagged me. I mean, and people were like, you had no idea? I said, no, I had absolutely no idea.
Well, that also shows how humble you are.
People see pictures of me getting the award. I had this, I don't know, this crappy like golf shirt. It's like orange golf shirt on and a pair of khakis. I'm looking at my wife and I'm like, why didn't you make me get dressed nicer? She goes, but I was afraid that if I told you to dress nicer, you were going to think something was up.
Right, right. You would. You would have said probably like, wait a minute, why am I getting so dressed up for this? I'm just sitting amongst the people. I'm just in.
I'm going to just chat with the CEO like during a break at the meetings. I wasn't even going to be in the meeting.
Yeah.
I'm lucky I got dressed that nice. Like, I'd have a t-shirt and jeans on.
Have your pajama pants on or something. Right.
I have shorts on. Thank God shorts I have shorts on. I was in Miami. I almost had shorts on.
True. Yeah. It's warm. Makes sense.
And I almost left the meet. Like, we get in, and there's a guy next to me, one of our VP of sponsor services, guy Josh Pruss, and I'm And I and they're getting, you know, they're going through these things with sales and marketing. And I turn in one point, I'm in Miami. I want to go out by the pool. And I go to Josh, I go, I might try to slip out. And he goes, go ahead.
Yeah.
Like he was just kind of being like, he didn't really want to be like, yeah, sure. And I turned and I go, and I almost, you know,
you almost got out
of it. I almost pulled the Irish exit and just walked out. But well, you know, I turned and but I was next to the CEO and I'm like, hey, Sam, I think I might leave. He goes, hey, you know, one of our people is getting an award, yet I'd love you to be here to support it. I go, oh, all right. Didn't know it was me.
And well-deserved. I mean, well-deserved. The things that you've accomplished, the things you've done on air with the foundation, which kind of leads me to the next part. Those that probably know you also, not just for being the radio voice of the Nets, but the Chris Carino Foundation that you've created has done amazing things. How long has the foundation been in existence?
The seeds of it were planted around 2010, and then 2011 is when we launched and had an event. Yeah.
Mm, beautiful. And what are was it a gala?
We did a gala to launch the foundation at the time, and we did it about 9 years in a row, and then COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't able to do it, and then it was always kind of up in the air for a while. So we haven't done it since COVID. Mm-hmm. But what I'm grateful for is that even without an event, we get a lot of support financially to fund the things that we need to do, and we may go back to doing some in person events, but that becomes very taxing, especially as it's become more taxing for me. It's hard to do. It's hard to put on a,
it is, it's a
like
huge,
we would throw a wedding every year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And people I don't think realize really a lot of the back work. Most people don't, like, as soon as the one is done, you might have a week off from it, but you're probably starting again, planning for the next one already.
Yeah. And I get really busy, and then I can't really focus on it until a few months before we may go back, but the point being is that the work that we're doing is important, and it goes on, and I'm still out and soliciting people to support us financially, and we do, and we get enough that, you know, we can support what we want to support, and our, you know, we're very lean. It's just a group of friends and family, and we're able to make decisions on things very quickly, which is important to us too. You know, we really don't have any agenda. I don't pay anyone. I don't use any of the money to pay rent or anything like that. So everything we bring in goes out.
Goes right out.
And it's something that I have a group of researchers that I know I like to fund, that I'm comfortable with, and other organizations like FSHD Society or Friends of FSHD out in Seattle. And, you know, Terry may call me and say, hey, we want to co-fund. Would you co-fund something with me? And I'll say, yeah, just send me the information. And then I consult with a person or two, and we do it. You know, we don't have to wait for big board meetings or anything like that. So we try to be lean and quick, mm-hmm. and get the money where it needs to go in a short period of time.
Yeah, I saw on the Chris Carino Foundation.org site that here in 2024, looks like a grant, some grant work was done for the Nationwide Children's Hospital out of Ohio State, right? And you did, you merged with Friends of FSHD Research. We just actually talked to Terry and Rick on an episode that correlates with World FSHD Day.
That's a $110,000 grant, I believe, that we co-funded with them. And we had last year, we actually, well, we had gotten Dr. Nazir Saad out at Nationwide Children's, who comes from the kind of the Scott Harper tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
At Ohio State, who we've been funding for years. We did a lot of Scott Harper's seed funding before he then got his NIH grants and things like that. But Dr. Saad is trying to come up with a better biomarker in the bloodstream, which is really important, especially now where we're getting into clinical trials. lack of a really solid non-invasive biomarker is something that can hold you back a little bit. And I think that that's it. We find it very important.
Right.
So, when Dr. Saad came to us about, his biomarker study, we started funding that. And now this work with Terry and Rick and the Seattle group is kind of, continuing, you know, helping him grow that study and continue it and do a little bit more. And Terry and Rick, Colello out in Washington, the FSHD friends, I got to know them over the years. And when we had our bike race, not a bike race, but we had a group of people that biked from Seattle to New York.
Oh, wow.
And in an effort to raise awareness and money, that was back in, that was a while back now, 2017, I believe that was. We decided they wanted to go cross country. I had a group of bike riders who wanted to go cross country. And I said, why not start in Seattle with, and we'll hook up with friends of FSH. So they housed the riders and they got us started. We did a big event from the Space Needle and everything out there, and had some fundraising events out there with Terry and Rick, and stayed with them for a few days, and they become good friends, and they're doing incredible work with friends of FSHD research. Just great people who have just been you know, selfless and relentless about trying to find a cure and a treatment for this disease.
Yeah. And they are very parallel with your foundation too, because just like you were talking about lean, all the money goes right back into cures, treatments, et cetera, research and so forth. It all really falls in line. You guys are quite a force with the two put together.
And Terry, nice, you know, I gotta give Terry Colello credit, because her and Rick, because they were the ones that drew that Seattle group and Dr. Tapscott into FSHD research. They provided a funding for him to get involved, and he's made some of the most important discoveries in FSHD research. So they deserve a heck of a lot of credit. If we have a treatment and a cure one day for this disease, the story of it cannot be told without Terry and Rick Colello out in Seattle.
Nice. Well said. So we kind of bring in, you know, one corner of the U.S. to the other, one coast to the other. As we're recording this episode, we're getting closer to June 20th, which is World FSHD Day. So I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit. And I think that also correlates for the trip you did to Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. Really kind of, you're definitely representing our community. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, so this was the FSHD Society and Fulcrum Therapeutics and their lobbying firm tried to, you know, think of ways that we could help get the, you know, with FSHD treatment clinical trials going on around the country, mm-hmm. and different companies, we've got to try to grease the skids here a little bit, you know, get it's going to require FDA approval. It's going to require funding and things like that. And we need to start talking to people on Capitol Hill about it. And FSHD Society reached out to me and wanted to know if I'd be part of a group that would go. It's funny, Tim, because I've always, you know, even when we started our foundation back in 2011, when I kind of became public about having FSHD and, you know, putting my name on a foundation was my way of humanizing FSHD.
Yeah.
You know, letting people know there are actual people behind this disease. It's not, mm-hmm. just letters and initials.
Yeah.
And also taking a leadership role,
mm-hmm.
and saying, all right, I have this disease and I'm willing to be a leader here in whatever I need to do. And I always did, in my mind, see myself one day on Capitol Hill, you know, maybe sitting in front of one of those committees.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got that call, if I'd be interested in going to Capitol Hill, I jumped at it. You know, I was like, this is absolutely what I think, what I've been doing since 2011 was building towards. So, you know, this was going to take an effort, kind of a targeted effort of who we met with and that, you know, everybody at FSHD Society did a great job in doing that and the logistics of getting us all up there and knowing who to speak to and putting constituents in front of their congressmen and their senators. And, you know, just in my group, a young man named Sam, who was from Arizona, who was able to meet with, you know, Senator Kelly from Arizona, got us a meeting with his staff, and he met, Sam met, and his mom met with Senator Kelly, and then we had Congressman Ciscomani out in Arizona, who our group met with because they were constituents. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of that, where making sure that we had people that were interested in meeting with us for the certain reasons, you know, beyond just doing the right thing here. You know, they want to meet with constituents. And but all the staffers we met with, we were sort of prepared for the worst case scenarios of staffers rushing us through the meeting and looking at their phone and not being attentive, or right, just giving us 10 minutes in a hallway rather than in a conference room and in their mm-hmm. offices. But for the most part, everyone, you know, that we met with were really attentive and wanted to get to know what we were there for and what they could do to help us. And now we know that, you know, coming out of those meetings, we've gotten some sponsorship on a resolution for World FSHD Day, yep, which was one of the things we had on our agenda to do. And the other things that we were trying to accomplish are harder to quantify, I think. But like I told our fellow FSHDers that when we were there, that, you know, probably we're going to meet with some young staffers, and many of them will never have heard of FSHD. Mm-hmm. So we can come out of those meetings with people on Capitol Hill in Washington who now know what FSHD is, may be in a position one day to help us. That's the job we came to do. Mm-hmm. And make some connections so that we can contact people down the road when we need things, when a treatment's up for approval for the FDA, when clinical trials are happening. There are so many things we want to accomplish, and I don't know if we're going to be able to accomplish them, but if we don't start somewhere, we will never accomplish them.
Right.
You know, young staffers become senior staffers. Mm-hmm. Young staffers maybe one day become congressmen and senators. If we can make these people advocates for us,
yeah.
If we can convince them to ask the right questions of the FDA committees, of knowing that there is no cure or treatment for FSHD. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good here. If there's something that can stop the progression of this disease in 5 years, if you start taking it now, yeah, that's a win for people with FSHD.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And generations, the FDA needs to know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're trying to use that, grease the wheel a little bit, recognize that we're here as a community. It's something similar that you said in an interview after you got the award that we were talking about. You said it was nice to be recognized. It was nice to be seen. It sounds like that's similar fashion here on Capitol Hill. You wanted our community to be recognized. You wanted us to be seen.
You know, there's so many communities out there of people that are just trying to fight through all the noise, right? To mm-hmm. be seen, to be mm-hmm. recognized. And that's part. You can't be helped until you're seen.
Yeah.
And just acknowledge, I think in terms of when that award happened, I think what was going through my mind was I was toiling and doing whatever I was doing and putting so much effort and that extra effort it takes to do the job with all the physical difficulties that I have and the logistics and the logistical difficulties that I go through. You kind of operate in the dark a little bit and you wonder if anybody really notices.
Yeah.
In my case in broadcasting, I'm not really worried if anybody's noticing. I think in hindsight, I do, you know, then when that happens, you get an award and you feel seen. You feel like, wow, I thought I was doing this and no one was really noticing, but mm-hmm. they are. And mm-hmm. I didn't really think it was important for people to notice, but it is mm-hmm. because of all the people that come around and tell me, hey, you inspire me to get out and do things because I didn't think I was going to be able to do it because of my disability or whatnot. That to me then knows that, all right, you know what? It is important that people see what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because it helps other people. You know, you have to see it to be it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And if people see it, they think they can be it. And if that inspires you to go after it, my story inspires you to do that, then that's what, then that's important. And the same thing here, where anyone in position to help us, they need to know who we are.
Yeah.
They need to be able to see us and to be inspired to do it, and then to actually know what we need. And so, yeah, it's important as a FSHD community, we need to be seen and heard before anyone will take an interest in it outside of our own community. I mean, that's another reason why I put my name on a foundation originally back in 2011, too, was the people with FSHD are in the fight.
Yeah.
What we need to recruit is people outside FSHD.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt by putting my name on something, it was now I was going to recruit other people to the fight. And we've done that. As well as just, you know, even people with FSHD who maybe were hesitant to join the fight. They see a human being coming forward and putting his name on something and talking about it and doing things like I'm doing and say, hey, you know what? I can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and inspiring. Absolutely. And I think, even the campaign and what you've done trying to make, you know, World FSHD Day recognized is part of that draw to get people, you know, from the outside in. We've seen it in other campaigns. If it's fighting against cancer or ALS, you know, there's been campaigns that draw people in that don't maybe necessarily are not directly affected. And that is important. So one of the last questions I have for you then is World FSHD Day. How significant is that, not just for us as a community, but even as for your foundation and other communities that are fighting, other groups that are fighting against this disease? How important is it to have that pivotal day to be recognized?
When I first threw my hat in the ring here and we started and we launched our foundation, I was fortunate enough, the first kind of thing I did, I was part of a meeting of the FSHD champions, which was a kind of a loosely formed group that it doesn't really exist anymore in terms of formally, but it was all the heads of it, all the different foundations around the world got together in Boston, and facilitated by the FSHD Society. And I remember we were all in a room just talking about how we can get more attention worldwide. And I don't want to, cause I could be misremembering it, but and maybe taking credit for something I shouldn't be taking credit for. Cause there might be somebody listening and goes, hey, wait a minute, that was my idea. But I thought I was the one who kind of said, hey, you know how everything's got like a day?
Yeah,
like there's National Donut Day and all this kind of stuff. Wouldn't it be great if we can do a FSHD Day?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking at the time, well, that sounds weird because D-Day, FSHD Day, it sounds like D-Day, which we just had 80 years.
But, right.
I used to always say FSHD Awareness Day.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah, too. Just to break up the D-Day part of it. Like we're not storming the beaches of Normandy,
right?
But we are in a way, you know what I mean? Like that meeting of the champions that day of all the groups, the head of all the families, so to speak, that was kind of our launch here to be together a little more united. And then a few years later, it just, you know, FSHD Society kind of took up the cause of getting the World FSHD day going on, I think it's hugely important to do anything we can to let people who may never have heard of FSHD know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you may just find one or two people that can help.
Yeah.
And if they're important enough to help and they can help and have the wherewithal, then it was all worth it. But it's It's an opportunity, right? It's having a day is just another opportunity to tell our story.
Right.
That's
absolutely
important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thanks, Chris, for being here on this day to kind of do this almost a two-part episode. It turned into be a little bit about the Chris Carino Foundation and what you're doing, as well as,
well, and I like to talk, Tim. That's the problem. I like to talk a lot, as I just interrupted you, but I interrupted you just now to say that, you know, what you're doing and you're giving your time to do these interviews, and you've been doing them for years now.
Yeah.
That's important too, because you're giving an opportunity to all these people with FSHD or all these people who are adjacent to FSHD to tell their stories. And again, when we tell our stories, they go out. We don't know who they reach, but they have a chance to reach someone who can help. So you're doing an incredible amount of work, and you should be commended for telling their story and letting everyone else tell their stories as well, and getting it out to the world, because that's important to be that storyteller. That's eventually how we find people that can help.
Thanks for saying that. Yeah, I'd like to try to be the vessel, so to speak. You know, people say, how do you do that? Or the people you talk to, and like, those are the stars, you know. That's why when I send out the emails to get guests in, I'm like, you're a featured guest, because you're the feature. You're the person that I want everyone to hear your perspective of this disease. How is it affecting your life? What are you doing? Regardless, you are a prime example of that, Chris, is that, yes, you have FSHD, but man, you are a broadcasting, you know, guru for the Nets, and then football, and even handball, we just found out today. I mean, this is insane. And regardless, right? And you do what you love, follow your passion anyway. And to me, that definitely has to be recognized too. And if it's through your foundation, that helps us as a community. What you did, storming Capitol Hill, as I'll say it, to, you know, raise your fist and you're, hey, hear us. This is us. This is our community. I am representing a group that needs to be heard. And it is commendable. And I don't think there could be a better person to do it, especially someone that has such a great voice. I mean, get the radio voice there, Chris. I mean, that does help, right? It gets recognized.
Yeah. Can I tell one more quick story?
Please.
I know we've taken a lot of time, and I don't know where you're going to put all this stuff, this footage. It may end up on the cutting room floor. I don't know. But just to talk to people who may be going through similar experiences as we are with FSHD, maybe the younger people.
Yeah.
You and I were bonding before we went on the air. I remember I was chastising you for taking down your Ranger stuff, New York Ranger stuff.
Yeah. I'll have to put it back
I don't see it in the background, but I'm a Ranger fan since I'm 8 years old, and got into it when my uncle got me into it when we were in, they were in the finals in 1979 against the Montreal Canadiens, I remember.
Oh, nice.
But so it's always been part of me, and it's something my family and I, we kind of do together. We love, you know, going to games, watching games together. And, you know, this year, 1994, was the 30-year anniversary of the Rangers winning the Stanley Cup. And that was a huge event in my life. When I think of 1994, I think of the Rangers winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
It was a couple of years out of college for me, and I still had all these dreams about being a sports broadcaster, you know, falling in love, having a family, the whole deal, everything we want out of our lives. But it was also the year, a few months before the Rangers won the Stanley Cup, I was diagnosed officially with FSHD.
Ooh.
So with all that, you know, those dreams I had that I really wasn't making a lot of traction on at the time, and it's kind of a frustrating time.
Yeah,
early 20s, and then getting this diagnosis on top of that. You know, the thing that brought me joy were the Rangers, right? Flash forward now. Well, I shouldn't say not forward yet, but when I get that diagnosis, my biggest fear became having to one day possibly need a wheelchair. And I thought that's where life ends. I'm not going to be able to, if we get to that point, if this is going to manifest itself in that way in my life, I'm not going to be able to achieve the things I wanted to achieve. That's what I was thinking in 1994. Now, flash forward 30 years.
Yeah.
2024. Rangers are the best team in hockey, and they're in the playoffs. And I'm outside Madison Square Garden, going to go into one of the playoff games. And I'm thinking to myself, here I am. I've now had a 30-year broadcasting career. I've been the voice of the Nets for 23 years. I've achieved that dream. I'm out there waiting with my wife and my son. I've achieved that dream of, you know, having fallen in love, having a family. And soaking it in, I'm sitting there and I'm in a mobility, I'm in a power wheelchair. And I notice Stéphane Matteau walking away from the fan fest with a number of staffers walking with him. And Matteau was one of my heroes from that 94 team. You know, he wins the game seven against the Devils to send him to the finals, the Matteau game. And now he's kind of being whisked away very quickly, but he, out of the corner of his eye, he must see me. I'm not trying to do anything to get his attention, but he sees a guy in a Ranger shirt and a wheelchair. And he makes a beeline for me.
Really?
And he comes over and he shakes my hand. He puts his hand on my shoulder. He said, "Hey, would you like a photo?"
Yeah.
And my wife takes a picture of us and we have this moment, and then he says goodbye and walks away. And I'm thinking to myself, the thing that I feared the most 30 years ago, right? All those things I didn't think I was ever going to be able to achieve. All those dreams came to fruition. And my worst fear also came to fruition.
Yeah.
And what I learned, though, is that both things can happen. And when he walked over to have this moment, it was almost like this 30-year circle was closed. And I think the message is, if anybody's going through a diagnosis, the thing you fear, you cannot let it stop you from still achieving all the things that you want to achieve in your life. Because your greatest fears may come to fruition, but it doesn't mean that your dreams can't come to fruition as well. So I just thought I would share that. There was a symbolism to that story that I, when I realized it days later after Stéphane Matteau came over and I had this moment, and thinking back 30 years and the thing I thought about, the year I got diagnosed, the thing I still think about is not getting diagnosed. It was about the Rangers winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So, and to have that all happen, I just thought maybe your
full circle moment
audience might like to hear that story. Maybe somebody needs to hear that story.
Yeah, I did. I'm glad you shared it. Thank you. Yeah. I remember the 94 Rangers and the success of the team, but hearing that story, full circle moment, I definitely jotted down the your greatest fears and your greatest dreams can both happen, right? And it's going to be okay, it sounds like, either way.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it's great or it's perfect or it's the way you want it to be, but it is what it is, and you have to find a way to still not let it. I told people all the time, FSHD, when I first got diagnosed, I knew that it was going to rob me of a lot of things in my life, but I wasn't going to let it rob me of the things that I felt were most important. And that kind of determination is what you need to carry you through. And your life may not turn out exactly the way you wanted it to, or dreamed of it being, but it still can turn out the way you want it to.
Yeah.
You can still find joy in it.
Deep. Man, that is like walk off. That's like drop the mic right there. That's beautiful. Wow. Thank you, Chris, for being here and sharing that story and many others. Love to have you back on in the future. In the meanwhile, though, I'll definitely be, as the NBA season rolls over, listening to your voice across the airwaves. Hope others will become Nets fans, even if it's for the sake of Chris Carino. That would be also fun. So thank you very much, sir, for joining us
today. Thanks,
Tim. And
thank you.
Take care. Yeah.
All right.